Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Social Ninjas Podcast, where your hosts, Kyle and Jeremy, have vulnerable conversations with the most successful entrepreneurs in the world to learn how they created and maintained an optimal mental health while building a thriving business. If you are an entrepreneur in the early stages of building your business who wants to learn techniques, tips, and tricks to improve your mental health to keep you and your business running smoothly, you're in the right spot. Quick disclaimer before starting the show. Kyle, Jeremy, and the guests they bring on the show are not health professionals, and what they say should not be used in place of or replacement of medication or your doctor. Enjoy the show!
We are the Social Ninjas Podcast. I am Jeremy. Joined with me is always my co-host, Kyle. What's up, Kyle?
What's up, Jeremy?
That's all I got.
You listened to that excitement. That was beautiful. Today, we have another special guest, Michelle Dickinson.
Hello, gentlemen. It's nice to be here.
It's good to see you and hear you and sit in presence with you. It's a present. Oh, double present. For the human beings who don't know who Michelle is, who is Michelle? What do you do? Tell us.
Sure. So I'm a very passionate mental health advocate. That's actually how we met, Jeremy. That's how we met, was through Clubhouse. But I think what connected us was our advocacy. So I'm a very passionate mental health advocate. I was fortunate to give a TED talk about my experience growing up with my mother, who was bipolar. And then I went on to write my memoir that was an expanded version of that. And along the way, I found myself telling my story as a vehicle to actually cause change in the world. That's exactly, you know, what I was finding. And I got very connected to wanting to do more. You know, they say, be the change you want to see in the world. So I decided that's what I was going to do. And so after 19 years in my corporate job, I decided to leave the industry and create my own mental health company. So now I create compassion and resilience in the workplace, both the private and the public sector.
Awesome. How do you do that?
So usually I work with human resource leaders to really assess their existing culture to see what they're already doing for mental health and see what we can do to sort of like enhance what they're doing to create a culture of compassion. A lot of times employees feel embarrassed about their illness, so they have an added layer of pressure and stress to try to conceal that. So what I do is I look and see, like, what are they already doing? What can they do better? And what strategies do they need to put in place to really create truly an inclusive work environment for people with invisible disability? And then additionally, I deliver my resilience training that helps employees stay empowered around their mental health, especially now during the pandemic when many people are working in isolation at home.
Awesome. So that is interesting, the mental health in the workplace. I don't think we've really touched too much on it on the podcast. So I'd like to dive a little bit more. Say if someone's listening and they want to be more empowered with their mental health in the workplace, but maybe they're, you know, where they work's not super open to that, or maybe they just don't know and they just kind of feel some shame about, you know, expressing that or asking for help if they need, and how they go about doing that.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things. So if you, on my website, MichelleEDickinson.com, I have 5 steps to cultivating a culture of compassion. So for example, if there's someone who is looking to cause change in their workplace, honestly, where I came from, we as an employee population actually caused the change at the grassroots level. It's amazing what a few powerful people can do in an environment. So absolutely, you can create peer communities. You can create an employee resource group. You can, you know, go to your human resource leader and say, what other resources are available for people in the company if they are struggling, or if they have a loved one that's struggling? You know, a lot of companies are realizing that what is not sufficient anymore is handing an employee an 800 number and walking away, right? There needs to be more. An 800 number is great, but how many people are really comfortable picking up the phone and calling? Not too many. And because of the shame and the embarrassment. But what if you had a leader in your own organization who told the story about his anxiety at one point in his career, who humanized that he was just like the rest of us, or she was just like the rest of us? That would immediately create a more open culture within the company for people to feel comfortable talking about it. So there's a lot of little things that can be done. And I would encourage, and even, you know, I'm always open to empowering people to be the change in their company. There's a lot of things we can all do without having to sit and wait for the company to sort of do the right thing.
That's amazing. It sounds like, why don't more companies have, are getting support from your company in any sense? For one, functioning, how well the employees will perform, I'm sure tremendously go up because they feel heard, they're appreciated, and their mental health is completely taken care of. So I'm sure their performance just goes up the roof.
Yeah, I think the thing they need to realize is now is the time when we're dealing with something like this, a pandemic, where a company can breed loyalty just by doing a little bit more for their people, just by showing them that they care. You know, ultimately employees, you want your employees to be engaged. If they're not engaged, then they're vulnerable. They're vulnerable for disability. They're vulnerable for expense on the company, right? So the small investment in really empowering their people now and talking and cultivating a culture of compassion can really yield them a lot when it comes to saving money and disability, saving turnover, and making sure that people feel connected and engaged to the work they're doing.
Yeah, I like what you said about how kind of the time is now to get this going with companies and mental health. And I think that's been kind of something that's kind of looked over or not really seen, is like kind of the pro of this pandemic is it's brought a lot of light to the subject of mental health. I mean, I was listening to the radio just the other day, and this company, I don't even remember what it was, but they were doing some ad and they were talking about meditation. And I was like, you never would have heard of that before. I mean, like 5 years ago, like I would have never heard of somebody doing a commercial and mentioning meditation. And because it's all relevant now, like people are seeing like, okay, we got to start actually taking care of up here and not just, you know, our physical health. Like that's important too, but the mental is just as important.
Yeah, you know, the statistics are very scary, Kyle. The CDC says that 1 in 3 people in the U.S. are either dealing with depression or anxiety due to the pandemic. And I recently interviewed the president of Mental Health America, who said, I am not surprised if by mid-2021 we'll be at 1 in 2. So that's really scary when you think about your employee population, 1 in 3, 1 in 2. I mean, that's huge. If so many people are being affected by this pandemic, their mental health is being compromised, now is the time to do something about it, at least be talking about it and creating more support mechanisms for people.
So can you tell me more about your story and kind of why you got into doing all this stuff with mental health?
Sure. Yeah, I had a wonderful career in the pharmaceutical industry. And if you would have asked me even 5 years ago, like what I would be doing now, I would be telling you that I'd be plotting my retirement from pharma, and I would have stayed there for the rest of my career. But, you know, somewhere along the way, I had a colleague nominate me to give a TEDx talk on our corporate stage. And I gave the talk, and it was about what the experience was like for me growing up and caring for my bipolar mother. A story that I never wanted to talk about, that I sort of kept to myself. And so when I did, it was amazing, the reaction, right? People just started to come out of the darkness and want to tell their story, or want to say, hey, you know, I think my parent dealt with this, or hey, I have a bipolar sister, or I struggle with it. So the power of storytelling was really present for me when I gave that. It was like an 11-minute talk. It wasn't even that long. But it got me, first of all, it reminded me that I had a voice, and it reminded me the power that just telling my story could have in opening that conversation, having people feel less alone. So from there, I was like, I'm going to write my memoir. My voice matters. My story matters. So I wrote my memoir. It took me 4 years because it was very painful and cathartic at the same time. And the whole goal of the memoir was to really humanize the experience. So have people who maybe have had no connection to mental health really understand what it's like to love someone with that. And when I released the book was when we were starting to create change in my corporate environment. So I was able to use the book sort of as the vehicle to talk more openly and work about it, to be sort of the change in my corporate space, and then get out there and do public speaking. People will sort of be more open to you talking if you have a story, if you have a book. So I was able to use the book sort of as the vehicle to be like, I want to talk to your organization about mental health. I want to talk to your club about mental health. Let me come to your company and talk about mental health. So I got really connected to this. And then, you know, as serendipity would have it or luck would have it, my corporate position was eliminated. And at that point, I had this choice, like, what do I do? Do I find another company to go into and just do the same thing? I was in like regulatory quality. Or do I follow my heart and my passion to be the change in the world? And that's when I went off and decided I'm going to create my company, and I'm going to cause more change for other people and other organizations.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. That's very brave too. I imagine that was not the easiest decision to make, and probably was pretty scary.
Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. But there is one piece of the story I didn't mention I do want to share. And that is, as someone who is leading a mental health employee resource group, I was never diagnosed with a mental illness in my entire life. Like, that was my mother's thing. I didn't really like ever really deal with anything myself, but I was going through a divorce of a marriage. I was together with him for 19 years and I was diagnosed with depression for like the first time ever. And I remember, as we're leading the change in this company, I'm like, I have to lead by example. I have to tell my boss. If I'm going to lead by example, I have to tell my boss. So I went to my boss and I said, I've been diagnosed with depression and I'm struggling. I'm doing the best I can. And, you know, there'll be times when I have to go to therapy, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, all right, I felt really good that I did that. But then 6 months later came and I was getting my performance review. And for 8 years with the company, I'd always been like top performer. So I'm sitting in my performance review, and I will never forget this, because this is the fire that was lit within me, was this conversation. She says to me, you did not meet the expectations of your objectives. She says to me, you did not bring your bubbly, upbeat self to work every day. We were looking for your bubbly, upbeat self. And I was sitting there like, are you kidding me? This is the assessment that I'm getting. And you know that I was clinically depressed and I was trying to do the best that I could. Right. And that's when it hit me, like, how many other people are dealing with that? So.
Jeez, that's frustrating, man. I mean, props to you for going out and telling your boss, like, I'm struggling right now. I personally did this exact same thing earlier this year. I had to tell my boss, like, yeah, you know, I'm going to be doing some therapy. So I had to let him know about that, which is kind of uncomfortable just doing, because it's like, for whatever reason, and hopefully down in the future, this won't be uncomfortable, but saying you have to go to a doctor's appointment is not a big deal, but saying you have to go to therapy, it's like, yeah, there's a little stigma.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And you know, I think that just made me realize that there's so many people that just don't have a good relationship to mental health. Don't have an understanding, don't have the compassion to be able to lead people who might be dealing with something. And that's when I was just like, we need to create more compassion. We need to create more understanding. Leaders need to recognize that people are human beings before they're an employee producing a widget. And that's what, you know, ultimately being pissed off is what led me to where I am now.
Hello, this is Kyle Mitchell here, AKA Social Anxiety Kyle. And I just wanted to ask you a quick question. Did you know that 46% of teens have shown signs of a new or a worsening mental health condition since the start of the pandemic? This is a silent pandemic that needs a louder voice. I'm talking about the mental health of teens in schools. And if you want to help with this pandemic, I have just recently started a new mission where I'm focusing on helping 1 million teens go from socially anxious to socially confident. Now, if you want to help me with this mission, I am speaking in schools all across the country. So if you would like me to come speak at your school or your child's school or your niece or nephew, grandchild's school, go to my website, socialanxietykyle.com, or reach out to me on Instagram and let's talk. Let's figure out how to make this happen.
So would you say like the biggest thing with companies and mental health is just like ignorance of mental health, or just like not really knowing, I don't want to say knowing about it, but like kind of understanding it enough to be able to handle their employees the right way?
So it's all rooted in self-awareness. I truly believe that it is rooted in self-awareness. If a leader is not aware of their own mental health, how can they possibly lead with compassion? You know, if they're not aware of themselves, how can they lead with compassion? So for me, it's like people leaders need to be better trained. They need to have that a level of self-awareness, because if you don't have self-compassion, if you're not self-aware and you don't have self-compassion, how can you expect a leader to be compassionate to their employees? It's all tied together. So I would say that, and then you throw in the layer of your own biases, right? Like your own childhood, and what is your relationship to mental health? And do you have an experience with a loved one who had a mental illness? And what's your lens on that? And is that a healthy lens? Or is your lens on the school shootings that you see in the media? Is that your representation of mental health? We all have biases. So organizations need to recognize their employees have those biases, and they're going to lead from that seat if you don't do anything about it. If you don't help them understand about mental health, get them basic understanding, have them become more self-aware, make sure that they have self-compassion so they can lead your people well.
Yeah.
100%. I was also being quiet earlier because it said my internet was unstable. So I was trying to, you know, be smooth and all right.
You're doing it.
Am I freezing?
No.
Okay, good. My curiosity, because I have seen it or for me in my past where I was nervous to really go head on and ask, like, are you harmful? Are you potentially harmful to yourself and others? Like, are you going to have a plan to be harmful to you and other people? And I think there's a fear of asking that question, because then all of a sudden you're going to deal with someone's mental health perhaps. And there's a big fear of that, I feel like, in our society. And I've been guilty of that as well. Like, I've had that happen where I'm nervous to like ask those scary questions, for me, scary questions. Right. Mm-hmm. But so I love what you're doing, because you're just like, it's normalizing it and it's giving the training so that people can ask that without fear.
Right. And I think you raised such a great point, Jeremy. A lot of people will step over someone's mental illness or someone's struggle because it's uncomfortable or because they feel the burden to have to fix something. When in reality, we don't have to fix anything. We need to just be there, be able to listen, ask the hard question, and bridge them to where they need to go. We don't need to fix them. And I think people shy away because they're afraid that they're going to take on, oh my gosh, I have to be a clinician. You really don't. Really, like you said, just need to make sure the person's safe and help get them to the care that they need. That's it. And amazingly, that could save a life.
I have a question, follow-up question. That was really well said. So say someone is at a workplace and they kind of, this person needs some support and it's a lot to take on just for me. I love how you're like, yeah, it's this dynamic. You don't have to take it all on. It's just being that bridge. What is the best way to figure out the best bridge to be for that person?
Well, it's care. It's clinical care, right? I think we would know if someone said, yes, I have a plan, or I'm not well, right? It's the ability to ask the question, get the definitive answer, and bridge them to, okay, so how do we get you clinical support? Who's your doctor? You don't have a doctor? Let's try it. Let's get some phone numbers and see who we can get for you. And it might be the ER. Honestly, if someone's in crisis, it might be the ER. You might have to be the one that drives them to the ER.
Yeah, and I think a big thing is just, like you said earlier, it's like you don't have to know how to fix something. It's really just supporting. I mean, really just listening, just being there, holding a space. Not trying to fix things is really helpful. That's when you start getting in dicey territory, when it's like people start throwing advices like, well, you should start doing this and this. Yeah, and that's just like, it's not helpful at all. No. It's actually contradictory to what you're trying to do.
Right. And you don't want to take on that burden, but yeah. You sure as heck could bridge them to support, the right support, you know. At a time of crisis, DIY is not the best approach. Sorry.
She had some input.
Sorry.
So I'm curious, what did support look like between you and your mother, and you kind of having to be there for your mom, and you know, her dealing with what you said was bipolar, I think.
Yeah. So my mom was in and out of a psych ward many times throughout my childhood. She had the rapid cycling of mania to the deep depressing lows, where she just wouldn't stop crying for days, and then ultimately she would have to go to the hospital. You know, it was hard. It was really hard, because there were those times, the times I remember most vividly was when she was not quite sick enough to be hospitalized and not quite well enough to be left alone. So like my father would go to work and he would say, could you stay with her? Because he would be worried about her being alone. So I would stay home from school for like a week or two. We'd lie that I had the flu or some respiratory infection. No one would question it. But I would sit with her and I would be subjected to her crying all day, or sleeping all day, or binge eating all day. And, you know, I mean, it was not easy. You know, I just wanted to be with my friends. I just wanted to be like a normal kid that wasn't burdened by my mother being sick and have this role reversal where basically I was playing the role of the mother and she was the child, you know? So it was tough.
Yeah, definitely a growing up real fast. How old were you when all that was happening?
I want to say my mom started to act differently probably when I was around 4 or 5. That's like my earliest recollection. And then she was in and out of the hospital all up until probably my mid-20s. And then she sort of normalized her treatment, because she had been on all kinds of medication. She'd undergone shock therapy. She had it all. So it's like most of my life.
I have a question. We're going through, I am so inspired and impressed with just how well and how amazing of a human being you are, and how like dealing with such a challenging situation with your mom, like how are you so amazing?
Jeremy, you're gonna make me emotional. That's so sweet. Thank you. I don't know. I mean, I think God puts in our path things that we need to overcome so that we can emerge stronger and be a force for change. I mean, I would never be an advocate if I didn't have the courage to tell the story. You know, I would never be doing the work I was doing if I didn't live through it. I would never have the level of compassion that I have if I didn't see what it looks like to see someone suffer. I think it all is perfect because it serves us. And then in turn, if I do the work, I'm serving the world, right? So, but yeah.
Can I ask you what type of work you do or you have done?
Like in life?
Mm-hmm.
Like my professional career, I was in regulatory and regulatory quality and medical education and a lot of...
I meant more so like emotional work that you've done.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were asking me about my career.
Oh, no.
Oh, the work. Oh, Jeremy, do you have an hour? So let's see. So I've always been in therapy. I've always had a therapist and was perfectly comfortable with having one. That was the first thing. But then I also went and I did Landmark. I did a lot of Landmark work. So I did the entire curriculum for living that Landmark Worldwide has. I became an introduction leader for Landmark. That was very eye-opening because this is all about peeling back the layers of ourselves. And then I went on and did Tony Robbins. I did a lot of Tony Robbins work. So I did Unleash the Power Within, where you walk across hot coals. And then I did Date with Destiny. Date with Destiny was like amazing. That was the documentary that he did, I'm Not Your Guru. It was based on that particular program. So I've always had this like burning desire to sort of unpack my childhood and sort of understand why I am the way I am, and never stop looking and never stop being curious. So
that's amazing. Yeah, because I don't think you had every excuse, right, to like end up being like a drug addict or whatever it is, but you chose the other path and used your challenge to be your strength, something that made you who you are. I know Jeremy and I both, had the similar thing of like social anxiety was like terrible back then, but we wouldn't take it away for anything because it made us who we are today. So yeah, I think that's such an important message for people who are like struggling right now. Like, it's going to get better. Give it time. I promise you this is going to be a blessing.
But you can't see it in the moment. And I think it's all about having some faith that every single challenge and everything we go through ultimately will serve us, even if in the moment we don't get it.
Yeah, 100%. Get away from that instant gratification. It doesn't work. It doesn't happen.
Yeah. Exactly.
So one question we like to ask all our guests is, if you had the ability to send one message to everybody in the world, what would it be?
It's okay to not be okay.
Boom. Simple, and I love it. As words need to be said a lot, and I feel like people just need to hear it, like, it's okay. It's like, especially for like us guys and stuff, and I think that's such a big thing. So it's like, no, I can't cry because then that means I'm being weak. I'm like, no, dude, it's okay not to be okay. Like, it's, if you don't cry and you hold all that stuff in, it's just gonna make it worse.
Keep talking. Definitely find someone you can talk to, someone you can trust. And just keep talking, get out of your head. You know, when you talk to someone, you diffuse so much of the struggle, it becomes less scary when you get out of your head and verbalize it. So just keep talking, acknowledge how you're doing, give yourself grace. Always remember, we're living through a freaking pandemic and we need to give ourselves some grace because this is not easy what we're living through right now. So, yeah.
Yeah. Nobody's having an easy time.
No. So true.
If you are having an easy time, in my opinion, you're not really doing much and you're living pretty small.
Yeah, maybe.
I still don't think it's possible.
I guess it is true. There is the law of polarity, right? There is no good day without a bad day. There is no like easy time without a challenging time.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm having the worst day of my life, I'm like, oh, that mediocre day is going to be so good tomorrow. It's going to be so good. Oh, today has been non-eventful. It's been so nice. Because yesterday, let me tell you, that thing that person said triggered the crap out of me. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on to the Social Ninjas podcast. And if a lot of people are listening to this, and it's like millions and millions right now, where can they find you?
Thank you for having me, Jeremy and Kyle. Yeah, you can find me on Instagram, Michelle Dickinson 71 with two L's, or millions. My website, What?
I'm just kidding. I said millions.
For my website, please go to my website if you care to learn about me. It's MichelleEDickinson.com.
Go there now. Actually, no, you can wait till now. Go there right now. Go to her website right now. Hold on, we'll wait. I'm just kidding. Go check her out. She's amazing. And don't forget to give us a 5-star at least. If you want to give us more, then you can go ahead and, you know, send us some money in our Patreon or get some merch. Oh my gosh, we have the coolest merch ever. Kyle's actually wearing our premium sweatshirt and it says mental health equals physical health. Mental health equals physical health. Look how cool that sweatshirt looks. Oh my gosh, it looks amazing. Where did you get that, Kyle?
Oh, I just went to the socialninjashop.com.
Wait, so you just went to the socialninjashop.com and you got that amazing sweatshirt?
I did indeed.
Oh, that is so cool. I want 17 of those.
I don't know why you'd need that many, but we also have some other cool, designs, hoodies, shirts. So yeah, go check it out. And we're always adding stuff on there. So all about spreading and normalizing the message of mental health. So help us do it.
Cool. Yes. Do it. Do it.
We will see you all next week.
Next week. Oh.